hearing will come to order. I want to first welcome everyone. Thank you for being here. This is an official hearing of the Senate Budget Committee, and therefore we will be operating under the rules of the United States Senate here in the conduct of a hearing. That means that witnesses will be respected. We ask that there be no expressions of agreement or disagreement with what any witness says. This is on the official record of the United States Senate. We are doing this hearing because of very deep cuts that are being proposed by the administration in terms of law enforcement, specifically the COPS program and other first responder support programs. We all know what happened last year. Even though our budget restored those cuts, the president threatened to veto the appropriations bills that flowed from that budget, and the result was very deep cuts. This year, again, the president is proposing steep reductions in support for law enforcement and first responder programs. And after what happened last year, I don't think any of us can be sanguine about the result this year. That's why I am here, to try to put on the record very clearly the testimony of the real experts, and those are the people who are on the front lines, our mayor, our leaders of law enforcement, our sheriffs, our police chiefs, our fire chief, the director of Homeland Security for the state of North Dakota, our state's attorney. These are the people who are working to secure our community every day. And no one knows better the challenges that they face, and nobody can testify, I think, with greater clarity or with greater persuasiveness on these issues than the people in uniform and the people who are given the responsibility of enforcing our laws and protecting us in the event of emergency. We have, I think, an exceptional group of witnesses here today. Mayor Dennis Walliker will be testifying on the second panel, as will Greg Wiltz, the North Dakota Director of Homeland Security, and Bruce Hoover, our fire chief here in Fargo. On our first panel, we have Arlen Rasmussen, the West Fargo Chief of Police and the President of the North Dakota Chiefs of Police Association, Birch Burdick, our very excellent state's attorney for Cass County, Keith Turnus, the Fargo Chief of Police, and Paul Laney, the Cass County Sheriff. Each of these witnesses has real credibility with this committee based on previous testimony they have provided, and so I want to welcome them all and thank them for their participation. With that, I want to make a brief presentation and then go right to our witnesses. We have, unfortunately, reports that have indicated that crime is again on the rise in many parts of our state and many parts of our country. Now, this is a headline from Grand Forks, and you can see what they are reporting. Violent crime reports increase, accounts of murder, rape, aggravated assault go up in the past 2 years. Now, we know that that's true in parts of the state. There are other parts of the state that have not seen increases, and we are all grateful for that. But the fact is, if you look around the country and if you look at parts of our jurisdictions in our state, we see crime once again on the rise. With that, we can check the record and see what kind of investment has been made to help local law enforcement and first responders. We have received $42 million so far from the COPS program, a program the president now proposes to eliminate. He's not just talking about cutting it. He's talking about eliminating it. We've received $42 million, and it's helped put over 270 police on the street in North Dakota, over 100,000 police on the street across the country. We have received over $43 million in burn and JAG and local law enforcement block grants, critically important to local law enforcement. We all know what happened last year. Pursuant to the president's plan, those grants were cut very significantly. We've received in North Dakota $55 million from the state Homeland Security program. We'll be hearing from Mr. Wiltz about the importance of those resources to our state and our first responders. And we've received almost $15 million for the Law Enforcement Terrorism Prevention Program. again, resources that have been well deployed in our state. And I know we hear from other parts of the country reports of abuse. And we all know, we all have seen enough to know that there are places where these funds have been abused. I can say I'm very proud that in North Dakota we've not heard such reports. And we will ask directly for our leaders in law enforcement to tell us how the funds have been used here and whether or not they've seen abuse in other jurisdictions or whether or not they think these funds have been responsibly deployed. I want to especially highlight the importance of the COPS program. The COPS grants have resulted in the hiring, as I've mentioned, over 100,000 police officers nationwide, including over 270 in North Dakota. They've helped with the fight against methamphetamine abuse, which has been particularly tough in rural areas. COPS grants have also supported law enforcement in our tribal communities. COPS grants also help ensure that we secure and make more safe our schools. And COPS grants provide crucial law enforcement technology assistance. I think it is absolutely clear that the COPS program should be a priority, yet unfortunately, instead of increasing resources, the President's budget suggests eliminating the COPS program. And not just the COPS program. Also, the President proposes cutting the Byrne Justice Assistance Grants by 100%. You know, it's breathtaking. I mean, we're not just talking about 10% cuts. We're talking about 100% cuts. 100% cut to the COPS program. 100% cut to the Byrne and Justice Assistance Grant. Interoperable communications grants. The President's budget cut 100%. Cut the Department of Homeland Security first responder grants 78%. Cut firefighter grants 61%. That is the proposal that has come to us from the President. Now, let me be quick to say, I believe those would be the wrong priorities for the country. They'd certainly be the wrong priorities for our state. And I think the record established here today will demonstrate that. The Senate passed budget resolution that I authored as chairman of the Budget Committee rejects those proposed cuts. In total, we provide $3.3 billion more than the President's budget for law enforcement and for our first responders. Now, I look forward to hearing from our witnesses today. Among the issues I hope they will address are the needs of law enforcement and first responders in North Dakota, what they see firsthand. What is their experience on the ground, in the trenches? Do they need, would it be welcome to cut these programs 100%? I doubt that very much. But we need to hear from them. We need to understand the role that these federal resources have played in the past and the need for the federal government to continue to support law enforcement and our first responders on both the state and the local level. So again, I want to thank the witnesses here today. And without further ado, we will turn to them. And again, I thank them very much for their willingness to come and testify publicly before the Senate Budget Committee on a matter of very significant importance. The timing of this hearing is especially important because the House of Representatives has now passed their budget. The Senate has passed our budget. We are now going to conference committee to work out the differences between the two. And so this hearing is especially timely. This hearing will be followed by a hearing later this week in Minot, North Dakota on infrastructure, roads, bridges, airports, rail, and then on Friday on funding for veterans, especially a focus on veterans health care. So we'll be doing three hearings, official hearings of the Senate Budget Committee this week on those three critical areas. Law enforcement and emergency responders here today, followed by a hearing in Minot on the question of infrastructure funding, and then veterans, especially veterans' health care. With that, I want to turn to Arlen Rasmussen. Arlen, thank you so much for being here, our West Fargo Chief of Police, and of course, as all of you know, President of the North Dakota Chiefs of Police Association, somebody who comes to Washington every year to fill me in on what the priorities are here in North Dakota. Arlen, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to be here. Good morning, everybody. As Senator said, I represent not only West Fargo as the Chief of Police, and we're the fastest growing city in North Dakota, I also represent the state of North Dakota Chiefs of Police Association as president. Today I'd like to visit with you about the needs of not only my city and our community. My counterparts here will cover a lot of the needs that we have here, but we're going to also visit about and tell you about the needs of all the cities within North Dakota. But usually, or a lot of times when we represent both large and small communities, sometimes there's a division and there's not unison. People want different things. In this particular case, we want the same thing. Both the small and the large cities are being affected by these cuts. I had the opportunity to visit with a chief from Williston, North Dakota, and Chief Wentz, and asked him how the cuts were affecting them. Chief Wentz said that the cuts were going to drastically affect them in Williston. Of course, they're having a boom out there with oil, which is probably good economic boom, but it's influx of people. And he said that, you know, they have a task force out there, and their task force is, a lot of it's funded by the Byrne Grant. And losing that would mean that McKenzie County, Williams County, towns of Crosby, Watford City, Williston, would not have a task force. And they don't have enough people like we do not. Very similar situation in West Fargo. We only have one person working narcotics in our department. A lot of departments of my size and smaller only can dedicate one or two people. We can't do that alone. We need to join in unison. So we form task forces. The Byrne grants have been instrumental in allowing us to have these task forces. And in West Fargo, we have a task force with Cass County and the State Crime Bureau and State's Attorney's Office. So we get together, work together, and perform the needs that are desired and actually needed by the citizens to protect our community. We will, if we have cuts, we'll find it extremely hard to continue with these task forces. And in a lot of communities, just will not continue with the task forces, and you will not be protected against the drugs. Also, was mentioned earlier, cops. Our community, just like a lot of other communities, both in the western part, throughout the state of North Dakota, have taken advantage of cops grants. What happens with this is that it allows the communities to obtain additional services from officers, hiring officers, maybe to be a school resource officer, or to be an additional patrol officer, or maybe their first patrol officer in a community. And it allows the community to gradually pay for these. It was mentioned abuses. I do not, or have not heard of any abuses in North Dakota on that. I know that there's communities right now that would like to put officers in schools. We had school resource officers being able to be hired through the COPS program. Now we cannot get any additional. And especially, I think that the need is for those that have never participated. We have cities that now have grown and said, you know, now we'd really like to have a school resource officer. We'd like to try that. And if for us, for example, we did that when that was allowable, and that got us a school resource officer, our first school resource officer. And since then, we've grown, and the schools have said this is a good thing, and we they've wanted more and so forth, and we were allowed to do that because of our city. We have other cities, such as Valley City. I talked to Chief Ross. He said, our schools now would like to have a school resource officer, but we don't have the funding to do that. And if we could get the funding through the COPS grant, at least we could get one person in there to start out, and it would just gradually lessen, and the city would take it over. But it wouldn't be an abrupt change for them, and it would be a very helpful situation for getting a school resource officer. My counterparts, again, will cover the COPS grants, I'm sure, and the JAG and the BURN grants. I'd like to visit about the regional information sharing system, which has been a program that has is also under fire and going to lose funding. The regional information sharing system is called RIS. And what that does is it allows us to share information amongst law enforcement agencies with a secure internet structure. We have communications. They also provides equipment to us by allowing us to use this equipment free of charge through the federal government, and we don't have to buy it. A lot of equipment costs a lot of money. It's very expensive. It's very unique equipment. The services are hard to get and so forth, and we may not need this equipment all the time. But when we do, they would allow us to use the equipment free of charge, and then we return it. And then another agency.
What would be an example? What kind of equipment?
Oh, it can be radios, and it can be cameras. It can be some of it is alarm systems, where maybe we're a lot of times agencies have problems with marijuana grow operations. You find a field, you'll put the equipment out into the field, and it'll tell you when the marijuana growers are arriving and so forth, and it'll do surveillance for you. We have they have equipment. One of the examples is we did internet luring a couple of years ago, where we arrested 23 people. And we obtained 27 computers that we needed forensics on. The Bureau of Criminal Investigation for the state of North Dakota had one person that did forensic investigations. We had 27 computers. They were also doing for the entire state. They said, we can't do this. We can't continue on at this rate. We're backed up, and soon we would lose court cases because it was taking too long. We got a hold of the RIS program. We shipped our computers down to Missouri. They did the hard drives for us. And
this is sexual predators.
Sexual predators, yep. Sometimes it's...
These are people going after our kids.
Yep. We convicted 23 people because of the help that we received from that program.
And they came from... They weren't just in the community. They were from all over.
They came from all over. We had people driving as far as 100 miles. We actually had one person in Montana that would not drive here, but was trying to talk who he thought was a 14-year-old girl into taking her parents' car and driving out to Montana. He said he had a garage that she could park her car in. They'd never find it, and she would come out to Montana. So we contacted the authorities out there and notified them of that situation. But again, the prosecution would have not been possible if we would not have gotten the forensics done on it, and we were dished out of time. And
you know, Arlen, you told me a story, and I don't know, I don't think you'd want to provide all the details here, but of somebody that was engaged in crimes and had a very distinctive signature to his crimes. I don't think we want to go into what the distinctive signature was, but maybe you could tell that story about how you were able to submit that.
I said that there's communications amongst agencies, and it's a secure communications. What we do is we have an intelligence system through the RIS program, and if we have a crime that occurred in the city of West Fargo, Maybe we have never had a crime like that, or maybe we have a consistency of it. But there's something real distinctive about it. And it can be that they do something real peculiar during the crime, leave a piece of evidence. Maybe it's that they use a pipe wrench and that they twist a doorknob off. But there's something very peculiar about this crime. And every time this person, we know it's this person or this group that does it because they leave something or they do something that's very specific. What we can do with the RIST program is we can share that intelligence basically nationwide. We'll put that intelligence in, or we can ask, we can query that intelligence system saying, I have this type of crime, and every time that person is, or that we have this crime, this event occurs. Has anybody else had this situation? And we did that. And we found that the same situation was happening in Minnesota and Wisconsin. When we did the, we contacted them. They had not figured out who it was, but it had quit out there. They had a little piece of intelligence. They had a part of a license number. They had a color of a car. And another part, and that was in Wisconsin, another part, they had another piece of information. And we had some information. When we put it all together, and we would have never met except because of the infrastructure that RIST provided with intelligence, we put this all together and we were able to find the individuals responsible for that crime. So it's a sharing of intelligence through the RIST program. These programs are vital to us. One of the other things they do is the analysis of cases. If we have a complicated case, and I know many, many agencies have used this because we do not have an analytical support within our department. Very few departments in North Dakota have this are the size that would have analysts. We can send a case to the RIST project, have that reviewed, and they will give us additional leads to follow up on and review the case. They'll provide charts like you have there. We don't have the, we can't make a chart like that. But they'll do the charting for us. They'll do the diagramming for us and so forth. So I would just, these are essential. I mean, and our department, we're the fifth largest department in the state right now. We can't provide that. So that means a majority, vast majority of agencies cannot do that, but they can through the RIST program.
And we're not talking about a huge amount of money here. We're talking about $40 million.
That's right.
No, I, you know, you've made the case to me, I think, very powerfully and very persuasively. And, of course, all of these things are on the chopping block, as we've indicated. It really is pretty stunning when you talk about, I mean, this isn't, you know, trimming around the edges. This is cutting 100% of the COPS program, cutting 100% of the burn grants, cutting 100% of interoperable communications. These are the president's proposals. First responder grants, cut them 78%. Our firefighter grants, the president says cut it 61%. I don't know if, I don't know what the thinking is to make these proposals, but Arlen, you've made clear to me in our visits in my office, this would just not be a responsible thing to do in North Dakota. Is that a fair summation of?
Yeah, that's a very fair summation. We will, this is an ongoing process. A lot of times it's the old analogy of patrol. I think everybody in law enforcement, in police departments and sheriff's offices have wondered if when you send a patrol officer out, how do you tell if that patrol officer is, you know, is it working? You say, well, we haven't had any burglaries, so we don't really need a patrol officer because we haven't had any burglaries. Or is it because that patrol officer is out there and people are seeing that patrol officers and it's preventing the burglaries? You know, if you don't do anything, I got a feeling you're going to be in trouble and you're going to be spending more money in the long run, because you're going to be playing catch-up again. So if we don't want to play catch-up once again and spend more money, please continue to allow us to do our jobs.
Thank you, Arlen. Thank you for that important testimony. Next, we'll go to Keith Turnus, our Fargo Police Chief. Welcome, Keith. Always good to see you.
Thank you, Senator. On behalf of my entire staff, I want to thank you for taking the time to come to Fargo today to hear my colleagues and I speak about the negative impact the proposed reductions or reallocations of funding for several law enforcement assistance programs will have on our respective organizations. I think it's crucial for our elected officials in Washington to understand how incredibly important these programs are to communities like Fargo and what the implications may be if they are all but eliminated. Late last month, I released the 2007 year-end crime data for the city of Fargo. The news was all good. Fargo experienced no increase in crime in 2007 in comparison to the previous year. In fact, we saw reductions in a number of crime categories such as sexual assault, vehicle theft, arson, and maybe most importantly, offenses related to methamphetamine. The men and women of the Fargo Police Department put forth tremendous effort to accomplish this feat, and they intend on making 2008 an even safer year for those who live and work in our community. These accomplishments happen because the citizens of Fargo, through our elected officials, are committed to keeping Fargo safe and enjoyable. This includes making sure the financial resources necessary to meet the public safety challenges of our growing community are available. But not unlike many other communities across the country, maybe even most, the city of Fargo needs the support of the various federal law enforcement assistance programs to carry out our responsibility of maintaining the public safety. In the mid to late 1990s, the city of Fargo received significant financial support through the federal government's COPS Universal Hiring Program, which allowed us to add nearly 20 police officers to the police department. Without this funding, it would have been virtually impossible for us to have added those officers to our understaffed police force. With the proposed elimination of the funding for this program, it will become increasingly difficult for a growing community like Fargo to increase the size of its police force and provide officers with the training and equipment needed to confront the ever-increasing public safety challenges. As I said last year when we met, what has become increasingly frustrating for me as the city's police chief is that the one thing I need the federal government's help with more than anything else is funding for personnel. It's the funding that has allowed us to put more cops on the streets of Fargo and allowed us to keep crime in check that has evaporated more quickly than any other. In other words, the one thing I need the most help with is the one thing the federal government will no longer provide. Other federally funded law enforcement assistance programs like the BURN JAG funds and the state Homeland Security grants are equally important to our mission. Without the funding assistance these programs provide, many of my department's needs relative to interoperable radio communications and other equipment needs would have been all but impossible to obtain. For example, the city of Fargo was recently able to significantly upgrade its radio communication system and become totally interoperable with other area police, fire, and EMS providers. The multi-million dollar assistance we receive from the federal law enforcement assistance programs now allows us to communicate much more effectively in the event of an emergency. Had local government been expected to finance this much-needed improvement without federal assistance, it's doubtful the improvements would have been made or been completed in the timely manner required. As the policymakers in Washington, D.C. continue to make Homeland Security a nationwide priority and one which starts at the local level, it is imperative that they recognize how incredibly important their support is to those of us on the domestic front line. Police chiefs and other local law enforcement officials throughout this country recognize that it is our responsibility first, not the federal government's, to keep our community safe. And we gladly accept this challenge, but we also recognize that local government simply does not have the financial capacity to absorb the sweeping cuts presently being proposed to many of the federal programs which have been so vital to our ability to carry out this responsibility. And it is in that regard that I respectfully ask those considering the proposed reductions or reallocations of funding for these important federal assistance programs to give them due consideration and fund them adequately.
Thank you, Chief. I mean, that's, I think, very important testimony, and I hope as this record is made, that our colleagues will pay close attention to it in Washington. Eliminating the COPS program, eliminating the interoperable communications, which is what allows various jurisdictions to communicate. So that in an emergency, one of the things we learned on 9/11 was one of the biggest problems that was confronted was that the various responders to the disaster at the Pentagon couldn't communicate. So you had fire responders, you had various police and law enforcement from various jurisdictions. They're rushing to the scene. They couldn't communicate between themselves. And it created chaos. This is the direct report of the people who were there. So eliminating the funding to provide interoperable communications, that just doesn't make any sense. Cutting the first responder grants by 78%, that doesn't make sense. Eliminating the COPS program, that just doesn't make sense. We, across the country, have been able to put 100,000 more police on the street in the COPS program. I really wonder, what would it be like in our country if we had to take those 100,000 police off the street? And nobody will convince me that we'd be safer or more secure if we were to take 100,000 police off the street. Next, we'll hear from Birch Burdick, our state's attorney. Welcome, Birch. Good to have you here.
Senator, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for bringing this field hearing to Fargo and for allowing me to participate. You know, the gentlemen with whom I sit and the agencies they represent are the true first responders. As a prosecutor's office, we're sort of a first responder once removed. But were it not for what we're able to do in the courtroom, with the work that they produce for us, we wouldn't be able to hold people as accountable for their actions and provide the real deterrence effect and the deterrence effect that the criminal justice system is seeking. If we cut the money available to officers and to prosecutors directly and indirectly, it will impact if anything gets into the courtroom and how much gets there and how well we can work with the material that we get. We have, over a course of a decade or so, received in varying amounts some federal funds to provide for a portion of a prosecutor through burn and JAG funds. Those for us dried up here recently, but we were able to replace some of that with some COPS funding. For the first time, we have some COPS funding that allows us to provide for a prosecutor dealing specifically with drug cases off of that funding. So with that funding, we've been able to put an additional prosecutor in the courtroom dealing with drugs, and in specific methamphetamine, but not specifically to methamphetamine, because I think people get to the use of methamphetamine through a variety of paths, and we're looking to focus that person's attention on all those things that may lead to methamphetamine use. And that money is important to us, because my staff realizes that if that money dries up, that position goes away. Without it, we wouldn't have that additional prosecutor. And we find that those drugs insinuate themselves into our community in a variety of ways, not just as parents who are using drugs, but kids who are using drugs, and perhaps most tragically, very young kids who, in a secondary way, are experiencing the effect of drugs because their parents are using them and losing their jobs, losing their care, neglecting and abusing their children, or otherwise simply exposing them physically to the presence of drugs in their own home. And we found that a recent study with our social services agency indicated that about 25% of their cases have some methamphetamine component to them. So that's
25% of their cases.
25% of their cases. So whether that's getting them into needing to take those children and put them in another placement, either temporarily or permanently, whether it's providing services to that family and trying to ensure that those parents are properly caring for their children, or a host of other issues, 25% of their cases have some methamphetamine component to them, which I think is an extraordinary number and sort of a frightful thing to think about. As the chief said, we have actually seen a reduction in meth cases in our area, which is great. I think that's due in significant part to the work that these folks are doing, as well as our federal prosecutors and some of the big conspiracy cases that they've been able to bring to the courts in recent years. But what experience has shown throughout this country is when you've been able to successfully target a drug, you can't then pat yourself on the back and move on, because in that vacuum, a couple of things will happen. Those cases disappear. Either that drug will work its way back into your community, or some other drug will take its place. We're finding here that we're seeing, at least anecdotally, a rise in the use of cocaine, a fall in meth, rise in cocaine. Whether that's going to continue and to what extent, I don't know. But it's incumbent upon the folks who sit here and my office to remain constantly vigilant and focusing on those crimes. We have, in addition to the normal prosecutorial work we do, we have three different drug courts here. Two of them are adult drug courts. One was started about a year and a half ago, and we had such success with that. We started a second drug court here in December, adult drug court. Now, we've also had a juvenile drug court for a number of years. You know, you sometimes have mixed success with these things, but I think that we have overall felt that the juvenile drug court has worked well. Some people don't make it through. They flunk out. Some people do very well, and they do well for an extended period of time. When you're working with kids, you've got, in one sense, a lot of leverage. If you can steer that child away from drug use into a better path, you've got a whole lifetime that you've affected for that child. They're going to become a productive member of society, live a rich and fulfilling life, if only you can get them away from drugs. For adults, you can have that same effect, maybe not quite as many years, but you can still have an important effect, and we're finding that the recidivism rate drops dramatically for folks who have been involved in drugs when you can utilize the drug court, which has a real treatment focus on it. So that, I think, has been a real plus for us in this community. And those drug courts also operate in part through federal funding that they receive. So that federal funding, again, not only in our prosecutor's office, but in the drug courts. There's a third place where federal funding has been critically important. We have seen an unfortunate number of criminal sexual cases against children in this community. I think that's true throughout the country. And we have established here in Fargo a child advocacy center. At the child advocacy center, we bring people from a variety of disciplines, law enforcement officers, social services, people that provide psychological care, and prosecutors, and all bring them to work at once on a case in one environment, trying to do limited numbers of interviews on these child victims so that we leave the smallest possible emotional footprint of our own on that child, and trying to get as much information as we can all at once with these agencies working together at one time. It's an excellent concept. It's worked well around the country. It's working well here. That agency receives federal funding as well, and it's been able to build itself up with essentially seed money from those grants and continue to operate because of that federal funding. Were that federal funding to dry up for child advocacy centers, that would have a critical impact on that concept, that team concept that we're able to use really only through that facility and through the technological equipment that they've been able to get and use there. And we work together with the medical team as well. They are part of the child advocacy center, the people that are doing the medical examinations of the children and others that do forensic interviews and the like. A last and but I think an important thing for me as a prosecutor, and frankly, this has nothing directly to do with North Dakota, but does have to do with prosecutors nationally, is something called the National Advocacy Center. Senator Hollings had helped bring that to fruition about 10 years ago. It's located in Columbia, South Carolina. It is the National Prosecutors School. It's for both federal prosecutors and state prosecutors. It provides unparalleled training for prosecutors around the country. It was the only thing of its like. and they have been under severe funding cutbacks. They obtain a considerable amount of funding from the federal government. They provide training, so they bring prosecutors from around the country there, all to learn about how to be better advocates as prosecutors. They also provide training on specialized areas like the, you know, technological innovations and scientific innovations that have meant in, that have been had in DNA, in the use of DNA in all kinds of prosecution. In this world of the criminal shows that you see on TV, both the crime scene investigation, the CSI cases, as well as the Law and Order and the like, the public has come to expect that kind of technology being used in criminal cases. And in the absence of it, there are many prosecutors who feel that juries are reluctant to convict people. So being able to do that here and being able to teach our prosecutors how to use it is very important. So that funding for the National Advocacy Center in South Carolina, I think, is critically important. And let me bring this back home to North Dakota. Very important for North Dakota, where resources to provide that kind of training are more limited than they might be in the state of California, where the state prosecutors can perhaps put on some of those trainings themselves. We don't have that same opportunity in smaller states like North Dakota. We provide training, but not just at that same level. So I think that there are a variety of ways here where really the states and the federal government can work together to provide a better result, that we can better take the work that the officers are doing, the first responders on the street, and bring it home in the courtroom, and bring it back and visit upon the people that are committing the crimes in hopes of deterring them and others from doing that in the future. So I strongly encourage continued federal support, not only for my compatriots up here, but for those kinds of agencies and prosecutors individually that the federal government has provided in the past.
Thank you very much. That's important for us to know. We appreciate it. Next we'll hear from Paul Laney, who is our Cass County Sheriff. Good to have you here, Paul.
It's good to be here, Senator. Thank you for, as my peers here have said, for allowing us to come in and speak about our situation and the impacts that these cuts will have on each and every one of us, but most importantly, not so much on us. We represent you and the effects that they're going to have on our community. Each year, the demands on local law enforcement agencies grow as we enter a time when we are asked to become more involved in all aspects of society. We are also seeing proposed cutbacks in our support from the federal government. As the protectors of our communities, we are committed to doing whatever it takes to keep our citizens safe. We have law enforcement officers in schools. We are involved in senior programs, neighborhood watch programs, drug awareness programs, youth programs, leadership programs, drug courts, and a myriad of safety awareness programs to include drug interdictions, remove alcohol-impaired drivers, seatbelt blitzes, etc. We also provide law enforcement officers to federal programs such as the DEA's Drug Task Force and the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force. With all of these programs, we are also asked to step up to the plate and take on larger roles in Homeland Security. We are active in development of buffer zone protection plans for local businesses designated as potential terrorist targets. We develop training and are active in preparing for terrorist attacks on our infrastructure. We are also developing action plans to deal with securities at points of dispensing for the Center for Disease Control's Strategic National Stockpile for the City Readiness Initiative. We do all of this while also providing critical members of our agencies to National Guard units who are regularly being called up and deployed. This puts a strain on our abilities to meet our everyday service needs, much less support the requests put on us from the state and federal government. The support we receive from the federal government is critical to our success in all of the above-mentioned programs. The following federal grant programs assist us daily in serving our communities. The Burn J grants, they allow us to participate in drug task forces that attack the ever-growing and changing methamphetamine problem. In Cass County, we recently used grant funds to purchase a canine to assist us in our drug interdiction efforts. The COPS grants. The COPS grants have allowed so many law enforcement agencies to add additional personnel and to meet the demands placed upon us. It has put more law enforcement officers on the streets, in the schools, and on state and local federal task forces, while allowing local governments the ability to budget over a period of time for the additional personnel. Here in Cass County, we have benefited from the direct
federal funding programs. Because of the COPS grants, we have been able to place cameras in rural schools where they didn't have cameras. We've been able to upgrade and enhance the systems in schools where they already had them and upgrade their existing programs. We have a state-of-the-art radio interoperability system that allows us to talk with all area emergency responders, and we will soon have a state-of-the-art CAD RMS system that will enhance our regional dispatch center immensely. As you can see, direct federal funding has made all of this possible. Local law enforcement has always stepped up when called upon to meet the needs of our citizens. We do more with less on a consistent basis. Our funding from the federal government is critical to meet the ever-growing expectations placed upon us by the federal government, as well as meeting the needs of our people. It's a partnership established over the years, the federal government working with local emergency responders. Let's keep that partnership intact. Thank you.
Thank you, Sheriff. We appreciate that testimony. I'd just like to ask each of you, the three major areas affecting law enforcement in terms of the President's budget proposal, the COPS program, the interoperable grants, and the BURN JAG grants, Justice Assistance Grants. We call them the shorthand of all of you know in law enforcement, the JAG grants. I'd ask each of you in turn, does it make any sense to you to cut each of those programs, COPS program, the BURN JAG grants program, and the interoperable grants program by 100%? Does that make any sense to you, Arlen?
No, sir, not at all. And it's it's pay now or pay later, and I think that these programs being cut will significantly reduce our ability to serve our citizens, and eventually what we'll do is it'll increase crime, because we won't be able to do as much, and it'll cost more later on.
And that's, I take it that in your testimony here today, that's not only your view, but that would be the view of police chiefs across the state of North Dakota that you represent.
Yes, sir.
Chief Turnus, what's your thought about the proposal to cut each of those by 100%?
Well, I agree with Chief Rasmussen. I think it would be an incredible mistake. Matter of fact, to some extent, I think it's already been a mistake in terms of the cuts that have already happened. Fargo is somewhat of an anomaly. I mean, you pointed out earlier how crime across the country is on the rise. And even though it's only 1 year of data, what we've been able to demonstrate here is that we're ahead of the curve. We have crime, we're keeping crime in check. That's through the work of a lot of hard people, or hard work of a lot of people, but nonetheless, it's been through the assistance of some of these programs. Without them, I shudder to think what we would be experiencing here in Fargo in terms of crime, especially some of the methamphetamine issues. But I think what's also important to point out is that the success of these programs is due in large part to the fact that the funding has been allocated from the federal government directly to those of us who need it. It has not gotten bogged down in red tape. It has not had to work its way through several layers of government. It's dollars that each political subdivision on their own has been able to access directly. And that has played a huge part in allowing us to be successful. And I think it's also played a large part into another comment that was made earlier, and that is the fact that there's been no abuse, there's been no waste. We've used those dollars very wisely. And so, it would be an incredible mistake, put us into some very desperate financial situations if those dollars are no longer available.
If I could ask Keith on the point that you made, because I hear this from the administration, that these dollars have been, that there are examples of abuse, of waste, of gold plating. How would you answer those criticisms?
Well, yeah, I don't doubt that they've occurred in other parts of the country, but I can tell you that not only in Fargo, but I think throughout North Dakota, the dollars have not only been used wisely, but they've had to have been used wisely because they're so sparse. There isn't money to waste. We all have legitimate needs that we've put those dollars to good use for. So I think it would be disingenuous to say that that waste has not occurred anywhere, but here locally and throughout the state of North Dakota, those dollars have been incredibly valuable and have funded things that we need. There's no extra dollars there for us to waste.
Birch, what would be your reaction on this notion of cutting COPS 100%, cutting the Burn J grants 100%, cutting the interoperable grants, communications grants 100%? I mean, when you hear that this is being proposed, what's your reaction?
Well, it makes no sense to me at all. I guess from a practical point of view, let me say this. If we cut all the funding that we're getting to law enforcement, that means I can probably do with less funding in my office because I won't need prosecutors for cases that officers won't be able to generate. But that makes no sense for our community, or for any community. The money that the federal government provides, coupled with state and local resources, are a necessary investment in the social infrastructure of our country. To eliminate that, we do really at our peril. As Chief Rasmussen says, it's a pay now, pay later thing. If we don't continue those investments now, we will pay for them later. And it is easier to keep crime low than to try and get it low once it's skyrocketed. It's a different effort. You'd rather try and maintain a low level than bring it low.
Yeah, I think that is a very, very, very good point, a very important point. I hope my colleagues will pay very special attention to that as we work in the conference committee to resolve the differences between the Senate and the House. We have more funding for law enforcement in the Senate than they did in the House. Both have substantially more funding for law enforcement than does the President's budget. As I indicated here, we have $3.3 billion more than the President's budget. We have more than the House does, and I'm hoping that I'm able to help convince my House colleagues to do a bit more. Sheriff Laney, what would be your reaction to the notion of cutting those programs 100%? Well, when you hear it, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
It baffles me because these programs were put into a place in a time when our country needed them badly, and we still need them badly. They were put into place because they were a great idea. It put direct federal funding into the hands of the people that knew where we needed it and how to best utilize it. And now we've done that. We've responsibly used the funds. You look in our region what we've been able to do with those funds. You look at our dispatch center. You look at our ability to communicate as regional responders in case there's a disaster. You look at the effect we're having on drug interdiction, the cases that we're putting into Birch's courtroom. You look at the readiness that we've placed in the Cass County area on our emergency responders. We've showed it's working. It's working great. So let's take it away? It makes no sense. It makes no sense. And then in 15 years, they're going to have this great idea to bring it all back because now we're struggling to maintain where we're already at. That doesn't make any sense to me at all, Senator.
Thank you for that. I want to thank this entire panel. I think you've made a powerful case here. And I very much appreciate your time and the energy and effort that goes into preparing this testimony and your willingness to be public about what I think is a key priority in communities across North Dakota. We enjoy a very safe environment in North Dakota. I mean, we are so fortunate, and we shouldn't let it slip. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Senator.
Next, we'll call the second panel, Mayor Wallaker, Greg Wiltz, and Chief Hoover. Thank you.
Thank you. I very much appreciate your participation in this hearing before the Senate Budget Committee. And Mayor Walker, I'm going to go directly to you for your testimony, and I want to again thank you publicly for your leadership. It has been a real pleasure and an honor for my office to work with you as mayor of Fargo. I think you are doing an exceptional job, and we appreciate it. Mayor Wallach.
Thank you, Senator Conrad, for holding this hearing in Fargo on a very important subject, public safety and security. I want to thank you for the chance to discuss federal funding for public safety agencies in our community. A common theme that you will hear from all the speakers representing Fargo and Cass County today will be the need to have federal funding allocated directly to the local agencies responsible for public safety. Direct allocations has worked well in the past, is currently working well with other federal programs like community development block grants, and is the most efficient and responsible and cost-effective way of ensuring our residents receive the service they need. In past, COP grants to the City of Fargo allowed us to put more officers on the street. Police Chief Keith Turnus described how this loss, if it goes through, will impact his department. Basically, in Fargo right now, we are dealing with the expansion of our city, and we're making process for the fire chief to gain 12 additional employees plus a new fire station on the south side. Now, we have allowed our police chief, I wouldn't say token, but within our ability to provide additional officers and so forth, and they were extremely impacted by the call-up of the National Guard and so forth. So they have been struggling to a certain extent, and we had process. We were going to start working on the police department here shortly, and without these grants, we find this extremely difficult. We'll hear from our fire chief, Bruce Hoover. We'll discuss a federal requirement that his department must respond to emergencies throughout the southeastern part of North Dakota. This requirement did not come with the funding needed for his staff to stay current in training for hazardous material spills and other dangerous situations. Another common theme today will be the need for a comprehensive and coordinated communication system. In Fargo and Cass County, the efforts of public safety leaders have resulted in the development of a joint dispatch center for both Fargo, West Fargo, Cass County, Moorhead, Dilworth, and Clay County, Minnesota. The dedication of Fargo's Homeland Security funds from 2003, combined with a special COPS communication grant, created a state-of-the-art system that allows patrol officers and firefighters in Fargo to communicate directly with officers in other cities or rural sites without going through the dispatch center. You talked about the problems in New York City and 911. We don't have the communication problem that they had. They not only could they talk, but there was a tremendous amount of building of their, you know, two different departments and so forth, and the general public lost during that event. Future plans call for software that will allow the dispatch center personnel to track squad cars, fire trucks, and ambulances at all times. Without the prioritization of federal funds for communication development, these systems would not be possible. Finally, I want to emphasize that all public safety efforts are a work in progress. We have made progress. We want to continue making progress. I ran into a woman the other day from California. They had just moved to this area. She was amazed how safe she felt in this community. We want that to continue. The federal government needs to be a partner in this effort by funding its well-intended mandates so they do not become a continuing local burden that taxpayers must bear. Once again, we thank you for coming to Fargo, and we look forward to working with you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Wallacher. And next we'll turn to Greg Wiltz, who is the Director of Homeland Security for North Dakota Department of Emergency Services. Welcome, Greg. You've got a heavy responsibility, and we appreciate the effort that you put into your very important job.
Senator Conrad, thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to address the budget implications affecting Homeland Security programs. Since 2003, North Dakota has received over $65 million in Homeland Security, law enforcement, terrorism prevention, and Citizen Corps funding. During that period, North Dakota has obligated over $50 million to local jurisdictions for preparedness activities. Over the past several years, Homeland Security funding has provided a major source of revenue in North Dakota for building response capabilities of local first responders through equipment, exercise, and training. Adequate funding has strengthened local emergency management programs and has enabled the state to begin transformation of an aging communication system to a seamless communicative link, providing responders day-to-day interoperability for timely response. Homeland Security revenue has fostered our ability to partner with our sister states, South Dakota, Minnesota, and Montana, establishing multi-state intelligence fusion, which you heard on the last panel. As you know, Homeland Security funding is a major source for local first responders in every community in our state. It has better prepared our firemen, emergency medical services staff, law enforcement officers, and others to respond to incidents large and small. North Dakota is extremely appreciative of the funding it has received. Although the funding source has been considerable, North Dakota is in dire need of substantial funding for program continuance to fulfill unmet exercise equipment and planning needs. Over the past 3 years, North Dakota has invested over $22 million in jurisdictional and state infrastructure communications needs. Despite this large investment, a recent gap analysis indicates that there's over $25 million left to spend to get us where we need to be. North Dakota is required
Greg, can I just stop
yes,
you
sir.
On that point? Because in our hearings in previous years and in our hearings in Washington, this whole question of interoperable communications just jumps out at you. And the proposal to cut interoperable communications grants by 100%, does that make any sense to you?
It absolutely makes no sense. Given the fact that we've got this large gap in North Dakota currently, given the fact that we're getting this one-time PSIC grant, which is not a part of the program in future years, which is going to give North Dakota $5 million, we will still have a deficit of $20 million to go. And that affects our local responders' ability to communicate with each other.
I tell you, I wish everybody here could hear the testimony that I heard about what happened on 9/11 when the Pentagon was struck, and what happened to the personnel that were responding. That's the sheriffs, the police, the fire, the emergency medical. I tell you, it's heartbreaking. They tell you about the chaos that they experienced when multiple jurisdictions were attempting to come to the aid of people who had been hurt. And of course, no one knew in those first minutes of response how serious the situation was. The same occurred in New York. And the fact that those first responders weren't able to talk to each other, it's just unacceptable. It's just unacceptable. And great strides are being made here. To interrupt that progress would be just a serious mistake. And so we cannot let this happen. Greg, I thank you for making the point.
Yes, Senator. In addition, you know that we are required to train our first responders and community leaders to the new NIMS standard, the National Incident Management System. In the state of North Dakota, we've come close to getting 50% of those folks trained. We've got a long ways to go. Those Homeland Security dollars support that training. In FY08, or fiscal year 08...
And what difference does that make? I mean, we hear, I know the public hears, well, people, 50% of the people have been trained. What difference does it make whether they've gotten that training or not?
It makes a large difference, Senator, from the perspective that first responders, if they know what the system is that we're going to use as we respond, it allows everybody to know what's going to happen when they get to the site.
And so we're not making it up as we go along.
We're not making it up. We have a
trained system to the task.
That is correct.
So people are ready. They know what's going to be expected of them and what each of them has got to do to deal with the situation.
That is correct. In fiscal year 2008, it's projected that North Dakota will receive around $6 million. This amount compares to $10.7 million in 2006 and nearly $20 million in 2004. As we meet today, the fiscal year 2009 budget offers further unjustly severe cuts to Homeland Security. The 2009 budget cuts for Homeland Security program cuts the program from $950 million to $200 million, a 79% reduction. North Dakota has taken a series of budget cuts over the last 3 years and is currently operating on a $6 million budget. This bare bones allocation provides basic funding available to maintain and build jurisdictional capability. When I say build, at a very slow pace. We urge this program to be funded as previously authorized by the 911 Commission Act. In pertaining to communications interoperability, the budget includes no funding, as you've pointed out, interoperable communications grant. North Dakota, as I said, has identified $25 million yet in communications needs, and without that federal part, the local folks will just not be able to pull that together. And with emergency management, the FY09 budget cuts emergency management performance grants funding by over 30%. This program is the backbone of emergency planning for building capabilities for North Dakota emergency management and the programs of 53 counties and the four tribes. This cut will severely impact these essential programs. We recommend full funding of the program at the level indicated by the 9/11 Commission Act. Additionally, current administration of the program continues to decrease funding availability for state execution of the program. I will address just a couple of areas. The 80-20 rule that exists within the program. Current rule dictates that 80% of the funding must be allocated to local units of government. The rule is not equitable. Many of the state programs that are executed are linked to benefiting local jurisdictions through application. The example I can provide there is that state radio in North Dakota services our 22 smaller counties. Yet, that to upgrade that system has had to completely come out of the state allocation. Serious consideration should be given to a more equitable distribution in that particular funding formula. 15% cap on staffing. Decreasing funds over the past 3 years have stressed the state's ability to meet needs of staffing for program execution and compliance with DHS mandates. Expansion or elimination of the 3% cap on administration. Current Homeland Security restricts administration to 3% in 2008 versus 5% in 2007. The administration responsibilities of Homeland Security grants do not have a direct correlation to the amount of funding received. It basically costs North Dakota as much to administer a $6 million program as it does to administer a $10 million program. Current requirements and mandates from DHS, including but not limited to biannual strategy implementation reports, preparedness reports, and data calls, currently require funding in excess of the 3% that we will be authorized. Reverting back to a more realistic 5% is recommended. In closing, North Dakota is concerned about the current proposed budget cuts for Homeland Security program. Unless significant change is implemented, our current program will be severely impacted and ultimately hinder the ability of first responders in North Dakota to meet the national standards. Congress has the ability to rectify this impending situation through the inclusion and appropriation of significant funding to maintain and perpetual ongoing program and mandate specific changes, and we would encourage your support in that, Senator.
Well, thank you, Greg. I just want to repeat the budget that I wrote last year restored the cuts, but when the appropriations bills were written to that budget, the President threatened to veto each of those appropriations bills. The result was that Congress had to go back, take back those appropriations bills, and make the cuts insisted on by the administration, because they would otherwise not become law. This year, again, the budget that I have written and has now passed the Senate has restored these cuts in each of these areas. Now again, we are faced with presidential veto threat. He says if appropriations bills are written to that level, he will veto them. And honestly, for the life of me, I can't understand what the thinking is to say we should cut the COPS program 100%, cut burn JAG grants 100%, cut
interoperable communications 100%, cut first responders on Homeland Security 78%, cut the fire grants 61%. And I know that Iraq and the war funding alone is going to be $170 billion for this year, $170 billion. And so that puts enormous pressure to cut everything else. But I think we got to think about what we're doing here. Somehow we got enough money to support law enforcement in Iraq, but we can't do it here. We got enough money to support fire suppression in Iraq, but somehow we got to cut here 60%. I just don't think that's an outcome that makes any sense for the safety and security of our communities. I look across our state of North Dakota and the experiences I've had with law enforcement in every corner of this state. I think of the experiences I've had with the mayors and the county commissioners and the sheriffs, the fire chiefs. I can't find a single one. I've not found a single one that think this makes any sense at all. With that, I want to call on our outstanding fire chief, Bruce Hoover.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, Senator. From the perspective of the Fargo Fire Department, I would prioritize federal assistance in the following order. First, the SAFER grants, the staffing for adequate fire and emergency response. These are grants that go directly to the departments for staffing. From my perspective, they were severely underfunded, and the new budget eliminates that funding completely. In the assistance to firefighter grants, funds that go directly to fire departments for equipment are important. The COPS grants have been extremely valuable to us in the fire service because of the interoperable communication component. The COPS grants have assisted us in the radios, the infrastructure for our system, as well as the equipment for our vehicles. And the Homeland Security funds at this point have not been as valuable to my agency as we've not received any of those funds since fiscal year 2005. Communities throughout the state of North Dakota have the expectations that fire departments and police departments from larger cities will be available to respond to emergencies in small communities, and we want to be good neighbors. But we don't have all the resources we need to provide services to our citizens, much less to citizens in other jurisdictions. The current method of distributing Homeland Security funds to the state and redistributing them to local jurisdictions hasn't been an effective means of getting that support to the cities that are capable of responding to other emergencies. North Dakota emergency responders are acutely aware that no political subdivision within the state has the resources to successfully mitigate large emergencies without assistance from other agencies and jurisdictions. This is why Fargo Fire has mutual aid with cities like Bismarck, North Dakota, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota. In reality, when there is a major incident, the cities that have been called to assist other cities are cities like Fargo, Bismarck, and Sioux Falls. And this concept is not recognized when the funds are flowed through the state. In summary, there is an expectation that cities like Fargo will provide resources to other jurisdictions. We have not received Homeland Security funds at the Fargo Fire Department since FY 2005. And we prefer a method of distribution of funds to political subdivisions that are in a position to assist others. So thank you, Senator.
And direct allocation. One of the things we've learned is let's not run it through, a bunch of hoops and everybody takes a haircut. Let's have direct allocation of funds to the jurisdictions that are going to use the money. I tell you, I've seen this over and over. We certainly saw it, Dennis, in the disasters, the flooding disasters back in the time of the Great Flood. Boy, direct allocation. We sent that money directly to the cities. Don't run it through the state. Don't run it through some other bureaucracy in Washington where they take 10% off and they take another 10% off at some other jurisdictional level.
We sent that money directly to the cities. And that's the most efficient way of distributing that money. Let me ask each of you, if you were before my colleagues right now, and this budget proposal is on the table from the president to make these draconian cuts, what would you say to my colleagues to try to persuade them that that's not the right thing to do? Mayor Walker, what would you say?
The process is very simple. Is it because Fargo has a bigger staff or whatever that we have picked out the radio system to be forward-thinking in that and not to spend it on vehicles and so forth? What needs to be done is the grants need to come to the cities. As far as these cuts, I consider myself a hawk when it comes to the war in Iraq. Well, I've been watching public television now to see all the mistakes that have been made over there for many, many years. And I am just amazed. One of the things that we heard last year when I was there for the State of the Union was that we're going to work together. And I keep making the same statement again. We are not working together. And neither did the State Department, neither did the CIA, or anybody else work together with the military and so forth. The whole process is people have to take what North Dakota's done. And North Dakota has a Democratic coalition to the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives, and they are for North Dakota. That's what needs to be done. This whole process is just absolutely asinine the way things are going today. Is it going to change with a change in administration? It'll probably change. But everybody has to understand what our Congress needs to do is to put all that stuff behind them and deal with the people of North Dakota, deal with the people of the United States and so forth. As far as cutting this, like I said, we have some huge decisions to deal with our police department. Granted, our chief of police understands that he did a good job in reducing crime in the last annual period. The future is amazing to me. We need a safe community. I mean, what really scares you, if we go back to the gangs and so forth that were effectively fought a few years ago in Fargo, North Dakota, in this area, I mean, I am so proud that we have taken the process of combining both counties, both all of our cities and so forth, in Cass and Clay and so forth. I mean, that's an amazing thing. I mean, absolutely amazing. So these cuts are absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I can't say it's ludicrous, as far as I'm concerned, to go to the point that we're going to reduce funding. Maybe there's some process where, I mean, I think if we're going to have four quadrants in the state of North Dakota to respond to each and every major significant disaster, that's fine. But we also have to consider that as priority funding and so forth. So that's my view. It's not the view, I'm sure, of some of these small towns, but as far as I'm concerned, it's absolutely ludicrous to cut out what we consider three very important programs. And once you start them, you need to be continued, because cities continue to expect it. You know, they all understand a little bit of cut, but to cut them out completely just doesn't make any sense at all.
No. No, I tell you, I've gone over this and over this and over this, and it just doesn't make sense. Greg, what would you say to our colleagues?
Well, Senator, I would tell you and your colleagues that Washington has asked us in the states to build a capability that is able to respond to a variety of events since 9/11. I would tell you that we have not yet built that capability universally across all the jurisdictions in this state, and I know across the nation. And to pull the funding at this point in time is going to put that burden on local government, and it's not going to happen. Whatever gains are made are going to be slow and take a long time. And so we need to sustain the level of funding for the next number of years to build that capability and then figure out a transitional status sometime down the road.
You know, Greg, sometimes I think what happens is people say, well, terrorist threat, biggest targets, the terrorists of New York, Washington, D.C. That's true. They are the biggest terrorist targets. We also know that any security situation, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And terrorists have come into this country by crossing borders. And if you've got a porous border in one part of the country, guess what? People are going to figure that out. So you cannot just focus on one geographic location. Certainly, they should have priority funding. I don't think any of us would disagree with that. But to suggest you're going to not have it anywhere in the rest of the country, that really doesn't make common sense. I would add to it that what we're asking jurisdictions to do is not to just be prepared for terrorist threat. Yes, that is the top of the list. But we've got other national emergencies, regional emergencies we have to be prepared for. Hurricane, tornado, God forbid, pandemic flu. And, you know, pandemic flu hadn't gotten a lot of attention in the last year. Got a lot more attention 2-3 years ago. But if there is another pandemic flu, my own grandmother died in the flu epidemic of 1918 here in North Dakota. If there's another pandemic flu, Sheriff Laney talked a little about it. CDC, you know, we may have to distribute drugs on an emergency basis to stop the spread of flu, in a pandemic flu. That's the plan, isn't it? And, well, you could have mass panic, right? So we've got to be prepared with a plan. And it involves law enforcement. It involves our emergency medical responders. It involves, Greg, your shop. It involves the mayor. You know, that requires funding. And now to talk about cutting the first responder grants, 78%, you know, how are you going to be prepared then? How are you going to be prepared if you haven't provided the resources to do it? So, Chief Hoover, what would you say to my colleagues?
Well, I would say that, you know, these cuts aren't just about public safety. Crime's a social problem. Fire's a social problem. You know, so the impact of these cuts are bigger than what's happening at the fire department, bigger than what's happening at the police department, but these cuts really impact the very nature of our community.
Well, that is a very good point, and I think the three of you have made it very well. I want to, at this point, thank this panel, and we've got a few minutes, just a few minutes remaining. I'd like to open it up to anybody in the audience who would like to make a statement for the record. I don't want people to feel that they're put on the spot because we've had the formal witnesses have testified here. But if anybody that's in the audience would like to make an additional statement, we certainly want to provide that opportunity. Anybody like to add anything to what has been said? If not, we want to thank all who have attended here today. I want to especially thank this outstanding group of witnesses. Mayor Walliker, thank you once again for being here and your excellent testimony. And Greg Wills, thank you. You've been clear as a bell. I mean, this money matters here. And Chief Hoover, thank you so much for your testimony. We appreciate it. The hearing will be adjourned.